Bill Murphy Show Season 2, Episode 16, right here.
It's The Bill Murphy Show, featuring the best in the business and people from all walks of life. Available by subscription for free on iTunes and at BillMurphyShow.com. Brought to you by...
And underwriting from Millennium Laser Eye Centers, a local partner and national institution worth the trip from anywhere to beautiful Fort Lauderdale, Florida for your LASIK procedure from Dr. Corey Lesner and his staff. Visit them at HaveLASIK.com. Millennium Laser Eye Centers. You won't believe your eyes.
Here's your host, Bill Murphy.
With this new episode for this Friday, Music Friday, August 19th, 2016. Thank you again to everyone who's been listening and sharing and liking and for the words of encouragement, suggestions. Keep them coming. Murph at BillMurphyShow.com. It's one of the ways you can get in touch with me with your comments, suggestions. You got a musician that you want to see on here or just, you know, one of those people with an interesting story because everybody's got one. Bring your suggestions or, you know, volunteer to come on yourself and be a guest and tell us, tell everyone your interesting story. Some technical stuff to get out of the way. Several different ways to listen to the show, of course, by iTunes. You can go directly to BillMurphyShow.com anytime you like and access the most recent show right there on the homepage. Also, TuneIn Radio, one of those apps that lets you listen to your local radio stations while you're out of the area, or if you're in a building that doesn't pick up radio well, you can listen to TuneIn Radio with Wi-Fi. They have podcasts there as well. So if TuneIn's one of those things that you regularly listen to, search Bill Murphy Show on there and listen to us on the same platform that you listen to your radio stations. Blueberry.com, the company that supplies the feed and gets it out to all the other podcast services, about a dozen of them carrying the show. So any number of ways to listen these days. Very, very easy. Just one press of a button and you're off. Of course, with Bluetooth, you can hear it in full fidelity. And our music on the show always presented in the highest quality possible. So you'll be very, very surprised if you dial this thing up on Bluetooth on a nice car stereo or plug it into your home stereo as well. Another example of that, some great, great music on this show as we go back to 2012 and dig up a show that we did with Chris Price, an LA-based musician who recorded an album in 2012 called Homesick using nothing but his iPhone 4 at the time, and an app called 4Trax, which is one of the many multi-track recording apps that are out there. And what is so great about this show is the detail that we go into talking about this and Chris describing how the limited resources and the one little tiny built-in microphone forced him to find creative ways and atmospheres, and ambiance, locations, exotic locations, some historic locations as well. Because in field recording, as we would definitely describe this, it's all about finding the right sound, putting the mic the right distance from it, and doing it the old-fashioned way. So enjoy this one, a special encore presentation of the Bill Murphy Show Music Friday with Chris Price from 2012. With a few songs from his album Homesick joining us on the telephone using the same phone he used to record the album, Chris Price. How's it going, Chris?
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good, sir. I really appreciate you coming on. Fernando Perdomo told me about your record and I immediately said, well, I got to get him on my show. And that was before I even heard the record. And after hearing it now, and I'm sure you've heard this from a lot of people, it really is a little bit hard to believe that it was all recorded on the iPhone. I want to get to one of the songs right away so that people can hear what we're talking about and then dissect it a little more. But you must get that a lot, that it sounds too good to be true.
I mean, I get it for myself. I still can't believe that I did it. You know, originally it was kind of a dare for myself. We just wanted to do one song, and we got through it, and it came together so well that we decided to do the whole record that way. But, I mean, it was about 3 weeks of work and spread out over a few months because my friend Kyle followed me around all these locations you were talking about to film videos for every song so you could see where all the parts were played. So I was kind of working on his schedule. So I basically took all last summer to make the record, starting sort of at the beginning of the summer, and we ended in September. Like, so about a year ago, today almost, was when we finished making the record. Mm. And I still, it's now that I have some distance from the record, I still can't believe that it came out the way it did. It was just a whole long process of discovery and what this thing is capable of and what I'm capable of, and it was really just gratifying and a lot of fun.
We're going to get very technical with this and discuss in detail how you did it, as long as you don't mind doing that. And
not at all.
I think any of us who are musicians and in the business, when we first got our iPhones and we're downloading apps like crazy, we all stumbled upon those apps, the four-track apps, the music creation applications and stuff. And when the iPhone first came out, I think a lot of them were buggy and they were cute and fun,
yeah.
But I don't know how you were able to, first of all, which app you used, and then how you were able to go, oh, you know what, I think this could be stable enough to do this vision that I have.
Well, the app that I first bought was called 4Tracks, the number 4, and then the word tracks, and it's kind of one word together. It's made by a developer called Little Code Shop.
Okay.
It cost me $10 to get it. And initially, the first app that I bought when I got the phone wasn't a recording app. It was the 8mm video recorder. And my initial intention was just to film myself in my apartment playing, you know, acoustic songs and upload them to YouTube. So I did a couple of those, and I was just really struck by how good the sound quality was when I did that. So then I started looking for a recording app, and I found this 4Tracks app. I had been writing a lot of new material at the time. I have other projects going. I have a band with my two brothers, and then I have another band with my friend Taylor Locke from Rooney.
Oh, cool.
So there's a lot of other stuff I have going on, but I started writing all these songs that didn't really fit into any of those projects. So I wanted a place for it. So then when I saw the 4Track app, I thought, well, I'll try to record one song and see how it comes out, because this thing apparently sounds really good. And even if it's not that great, at least I have a demo to make a solo record,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so the first song that we did was the song That's Your Boyfriend, which was kind of the most recent song at the time that I had written. And I thought, well, if we're going to do this recording, I was really high on the 8mm app. So I asked my friend Kyle, who's a director, to bring his phone.
Yeah.
And let's go around town and start recording parts for this thing and make a video.
Wow.
And so it was originally just kind of a bit of a stunt. One song done on the phone with video, also done on the phone. And it just came out really good. We went to the Greek Theater. I hopped the fence and I sung the vocal on stage there.
Wow.
We went to the Griffith Park Observatory to get the tambourine and shaker sound, because it had a lot of natural reverb there. And a friend of mine opened up his back house so we could play a drum set and a bass amp there. And I think the piano was done at Taylor's. And then we had two viola players, my good friends Eric Summer and Kate Reddish. They just met us for lunch in Little Tokyo at this ramen noodle place. And we walked around looking for a cool spot. And we found this storefront area in Little Tokyo, and there was this guy playing for money. We had to actually pay him to stop playing for a little while so that we could record in the middle of the crowd.
Mm.
And, yeah, I mean, once it was all done, that we had the song that's on the record now, That's Your Boyfriend.
That's your boyfriend with the beer in his hand. Shower, singing traveling band when you met, your heart was sore. That was 20 pounds before. That's your boyfriend. That's your boyfriend. Does he treat you? Do you get what you want? Does he take you to the nice restaurants? Does he always pay the tab? Does he hate when you get mad? Your boyfriend. Ooh. Relax, tell yourself that you're not cursed, not bad. You could end up so much worse. You could be single all your life, or he could beat you. That's your boyfriend playing video games. He's a charmer, putting Errol to shame, eating chocolate chip delight till the darkest hour of night. That's your boyfriend, maybe husband.
That's Your Boyfriend from Chris Price and the Bill Murphy Show. Man, it's from the album called Homesick, recorded entirely on the iPhone. And Chris, I hope that, and I know the emphasis on this album is put on the fact that it was recorded with the iPhone, so there's a lot of emphasis on the sonic aspect of the record, and I hope that doesn't overshadow the fact that that's a brilliant song. It's a great song, a lot of emotion, and you know, I think we all can relate to it a little bit. It's kind of a...
Oh, thank you.
Kind of heavy subject matter. Is there any truth in the writing in that song?
Well, the song is meant to be kind of one of those old Ray Davies style Kinks sort of withering portrayals of a woman who is staying with someone who's clearly not good for her.
Right.
But, you know, she presses on and she tries to tell herself that it could be a lot worse than it is. And I think that, you know, people do that a lot. Especially in relationships, they justify why they stay with someone who's not right for them.
Yeah.
For this reason or that, maybe attachment, they're used to just having that person to come home to at night, or, you know, at least he doesn't beat me, you know, that's the kind of thing. I've definitely heard that before.
Well, I hope that people are appreciating the music as much as they are the method, so hats off to you for that. It's a brilliant song. We got a couple more to listen to. Normally, on a half an hour interview with my guests, I'll play two songs. I couldn't decide which ones I wanted to play from your record, so I picked three because they were just, I enjoyed them all. And plus, they showed a nice wide kind of variety of the type of music you have on it. It's a great record. It's called Homesick. It's on iTunes, of course, the usual suspects. Really nice package, nice album cover and everything. But back to the fascination with the iPhone recording. You, there have been a number of attachments that have been available for the iPhone over the years. The blue microphones, the this and that, the XLR attachments so that you can use any microphone you want. Why was it, if you could do that, why was it that you decided to use the actual built-in tiny microphone that's on the iPhone? Talk a little bit about that mic.
Well, I mean, the number one reason initially was just because I wasn't looking to spend a lot of money on this project. It was just something that I wanted to see if it could be done, you know? And so, yeah, I was aware of external mics. I had made a record a few years ago with my other band, with my brothers, and this producer, Tony Berg. He's really into all of the Apple gear, all of the stuff that comes out for the phone and the iPad. So he's always telling me about stuff. But I wanted to do something. If initially it was for cost effective reasons, and then my next goal was to kind of keep it as dogmatic as possible. Basically, I wanted to limit myself on purpose because I feel like the less you have to work with, the faster your brain works.
There you go.
The idea is creativity is enhanced by limitation.
It forces you to be more creative, right?
Exactly. A lot of my favorite records, you know, they didn't have a million options in the studio. They didn't have 40,000 tracks or, you know, every reverb plugin ever. You know, the reverb didn't even really exist as a plugin, sound plugin, when Brian Wilson was making Pet Sounds.
Right.
And, you know, you associate that record with reverb.
Exactly.
But he had to do things to do that. He had to find some bathroom or an empty room, a giant empty room to get that sound. You know, Motown had to cut a hole in the roof and create that echo chamber to get that sound.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, there's so many things that happen from you being forced into finding a way to do it. Now, for instance, it's a four track, and I imagine that you you did some bouncing to get, you know, more than just four sources in there. Just as an example, you talked about doing the bass and the drums in that space at your friend's house, and
yes.
So did you record the drums and bass live in one take to one track?
No, I played all the instruments on that song except for the strings. So obviously it's not physically possible to play the bass and the drums at the same time.
Uh-huh.
But, on that particular song, the drums were all recorded at once, basically because I didn't realize that I needed to do it in a different way for sound separation. I just thought, let's try and keep this simple. So I put the mic about 10 feet away from the drum kit and I laid it down, and the bass was the same thing. And later on, because like I said, that was the first song we did, I started to realize that if I wanted to make the most effective sounding records, I would have to record drum by drum, meaning just the kick, then just the snare, just each tom one by one.
Wow.
And you know, some of the songs, it was harder to make that happen because there's some complicated fills and you kind of had to know where the rack tom was in the fill.
Wow, man.
Because you can't punch in the middle of the song on this, on the program that I was using. I guess the phone didn't have the processing power to like scroll through into the middle of the song if I made a mistake. So every instrument you hear on the record is a complete take from beginning to end. If I made a mistake, it's on the record, you know?
You know, there's a rumor that I have yet to validate that Hotel California, the song, the final version of that was recorded with discrete drums, each separately played, and I'm not sure if that's absolutely true. Did you hear that too?
I have never heard that, but that would be interesting. I know, you know, Paul McCartney liked to do that. He would like to just cut a hi-hat separately or a tom track. When he did his first record, the Cherries one, that was there's a lot of, you know, single drum tracking on that record, and I think it's something that maybe artists do when they're doing a record on their own. I like to bring that record up and Emmett Rohde's first record up a lot when I talk about this, because those were the two first mainstream records ever released that were recorded entirely at home.
Yeah, and in fact, the Cherries Paul McCartney record is the very first record album I ever owned as a little kid, so it has a special place in my heart. I can totally relate to what you're talking about.
Well, it's just the idea is that in 1970, these two records were both released around the same time, and they were both recorded entirely at home. And at that time, home recording was unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't do it. I mean, Les Paul did it, but Les Paul just knew better than everybody else.
Right.
But it was just like, no, there are guys in a room that make records. They're like scientists, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like we don't do that at home. Now everybody you know has a home studio.
Yep.
And I think that when I look at this as a potential way to make music, obviously there are still sonic issues that, you know, will get better over time once this gets taken more seriously. But I feel like this could potentially be a very viable way to make records, especially for young artists or artists that don't really have a deal and they're just starting out and they want to just get music on, like recorded.
Right.
And they don't have to go broke to make a record, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I know people that save up like half a year's paychecks, and they can't do anything all year because they're saving up to get into a studio to make a record that costs them $5,000.
Right.
And it's just, I just think, you know, young artists, there's a disparity right now between what people are willing to pay for music and then what people have to pay to make that music.
Right.
And I think that if we're making less money collectively as an industry, then it shouldn't be that expensive to make a record.
Very, very true. I mean, it's if they're paying almost nothing to listen to it, we should, you know, make it fair and pay almost nothing to record it. So I know what you're saying there.
I'm just saying, you know, low risk, high reward is always the best story anyways. And especially in this case, I just think it just makes more sense for people to have an option to make a record in the way they want to do it that is viable. You know, you want it to sound like it can compete.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, my record, I like to call it mid-fi. You know, it's not the highest definition of sound.
Right.
But I feel like it can compete with what's out there. So I think as the, like I said, as the technology gets better, and I think as people start to take it more seriously, we might be able to see some great improvements in the sonic quality of it, and people will be able to do things that nobody ever thought was possible.
There's no doubt about that we've only seen the beginning of this, but I think there's a more important lesson here to be learned by listening to your record, and that is that a lot of people that, you know, the aspiring home recording singer-songwriters that go ahead and record their own stuff, and they get their Pro Tools or their Cubase or whatever they do, and they do their software,
mm-hmm.
they almost sit in front, and I'm not accusing everybody, and I don't mean to generalize, but a lot of times you'll find people expecting the software and the equipment to help create the music for you and help write the music for you. And instead, they need to concentrate on creating the music in your head and being more, you know, efficient with where you're recording it, who's doing it, how you're playing the instrument, because that's really the important thing. If that is all going well, it really doesn't matter what platform you record it on.
Very true. I agree with that 100%. I've always been about creativity, and I do think that you're absolutely right about, you know, people write songs, and it goes down to even, you know, the actual gear for the instrument.
Sure.
Like somebody will write a song because they got a new guitar pedal, mm-hmm. and they want to have a song that has that pedal sound in it, you know?
Yes, sir. I mean, I don't mean to laugh again or you know, cut anybody down for that, but it's so true. I mean, they're just misdirecting the creativity.
You know? Well, I just think that we're talking about songs here, you know?
Yes.
I mean, it's different if it's an instrumental artist, somebody who's, you know, like a really prolific musician who's cutting maybe, you know, fusion jazz, or he's Yngwie Malmsteen or something like that.
Right, or soundscape music for that matter, and stuff that can be created electronically. You know, that's a different thing.
But when it comes to, you know, songs, you know, if you're a singer-songwriter, you got to be a singer-songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, or if you're a band that wants to do popular music, you know, there were standards once when it came to that. Yep. There were, you had to be really good.
The songs had to be there first before anybody could go in and do this stuff, so.
And if you didn't write them, they had a whole Brill Building full of geniuses who would write, like, timeless stuff,
yes, sir, man. So much more to ask you and more music to play. Let's play another
That's
tune
fine.
From this. And I am completely fascinated with how crystal clear the acoustic guitar sounds on this, and doubled acoustic guitars, I think, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
This is a song called For All We Know. And putting the iPhone recording thing aside for a moment, talk a little bit about the song and the creation of this song called For All We Know, which right away became one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's become a favorite of a lot of people's, and it's a song that I've had for quite a while now. It's one of the oldest songs on the album, and it's a song that I always knew I wanted to have on an album, but it just never fit in any other project I had done. Really personal for me. I just, I found it to be really significant emotionally. I don't really want to comment on, you know, the scenario that caused me to write it, but it, you know, emotionally it came from a really honest place, and I wanted to keep it as stripped and bare as possible
mm-hmm.
on the record. I mean, you know, I could have done a whole production for it, but I thought that it was important to just let the song sort of speak for itself.
Today, you're the only one I want to hold. Though I think that soon we'll go cold, that's the chance I'm willing to take. You said you want someone in your life that knows all the things that you never showed. Not a boy who needs to be told, but the more I don't want you to go. For all you know, I could be the one. For all you know, my heart tells me you're not really done with me, but the things you say don't agree. I wish I could just let it go. I do think there's nothing I could say tonight. Not a poem I could recite to bring us back from the grave. But I hope someday you'll be back to stay. For all we know, this isn't the end. For all we know, today you're the only one that's on my mind.
For All We Know, Chris Price from the album Homesick. And another beautiful song, Chris. Really, really love that one.
Thank you very much.
For people that are actually listening to this and want to try doing some recording with their iPhone, the actual built-in microphone, how do you get in it? Well, aside from how beautifully you play it and the room you were in, how do you get an acoustic guitar to sound that nice using the iPhone mic? Did you have to build some sort of contraption mic stand to get it placed right? And how closely mic'd was it?
It was very closely mic'd. The things that I could keep the mic directly in front of something easily was the instruments were the acoustic guitar and the voice, which is why I think, the acoustic numbers on the record tend to be some of the best sounding ones, because the mic responds well. You know, it's a mic built for the voice.
Right.
It's designed to accommodate a voice. And
so it has that EQ curve in there already, right?
Yes, yeah. It's already built in. It was just, it just has the right, I guess, tone that the mic also responds to. I kept it really close. I cut it in my living room in my apartment. I have a coffee table that's just exactly the right height in order for it to be sitting right in front of me when I'm on the couch.
Interesting. And do you think the coffee table created some resonance itself that added to that sound?
It is wood.
So, yep, there you go.
It's definitely possible.
And were we talking, are we talking like halfway between the 12th fret and the hole like you would normally?
I actually I can't really do that because of the way I play guitar. I don't know if you have seen any footage of me playing the guitar, but I play the guitar like Jeff Healy.
Okay.
I play it on my lap like a piano.
Oh, wow.
I'm a piano
okay.
player primarily. So I taught myself when I was 18 how to play the guitar, and I just did it, you know, with it sitting on my lap. And I play it like a piano.
Interesting. So the iPhone mic's not really pointing directly at the fretboard.
On that song particularly, it was not, because I wasn't with anybody when I cut the guitar tracks. On some of the other acoustic numbers, like there's a song on the record called Wrong Time, I cut that guitar part in Griffith Park, and I had Kyle, who was filming video footage, just hold it directly over the hole.
wow.
And, he just had to stand there while I cut it. Some of the stuff, like some of the videos on the record, I should say, just as a full disclosure, the videos were meant as music videos. They weren't all meant to be like a complete document of the actual take that was cut, because it just wouldn't be necessarily the best way to get the stuff done. We just wanted to get videos and recordings done as quick as possible without having to think too much about it, because I think, again, that's another ideology I have, which is the further you go into something, sometimes you can come out the other end. So I think that in this case, I was trying to make the record pretty quickly. We got it done in 3 weeks. That's a little longer than it usually takes me to do something, but I was figuring a lot of things out about the phone.
Wow.
So going back to the mic, the phone, I just want to say that I thought that the biggest problem I was going to have going into the recording was recording low-end frequencies, kick drums, bass amp, that kind of thing.
Right.
And it was actually the exact opposite. I could put it pretty close to a kick drum, and it would be almost clipping the mic, but for some reason this mic almost enjoys that.
Yeah.
It enjoys being right there on the edge of clipping, because you just get these really unique kick sounds and bass tones, and you obviously have to do a little bit of lifting the EQ when it comes to the bass. There was some EQ involved. You can't just get a perfect bass tone just
not.
Recording it.
Right.
And the kick, surprisingly good.
I think in my toying around with the iPhone microphone, and I have done a little bit of it, of course, not to the extent you have, I've noticed that it almost works like the old analog tape days, and that it, like you sort of started to say this, it appreciates the saturation and it gives it even more character when you clip it or
right.
almost clip it.
Right. Yeah, it definitely does. And the one issue that I had was recording super high end frequencies like shakers and hi-hats. I had to play almost every hi-hat take on this record, with the exception of the first song, which, again, I think that was because I was playing the whole kit all at once, so it kind of just fell into the sound, and it didn't really single out the hi-hat. But almost every other hi-hat I had to do on this record, I had to keep the mic maybe 20 to 30 feet away from the hi-hat.
Wow.
I had to play with hot sticks, really soft, and, you know, like, I mean, really soft, and then it would sound like a normal hi-hat. Because otherwise, if I was any closer and I was playing any harder, it would sound like ripping paper.
Wow. Wow. And so a lot of trial and error and a lot of try it from this distance, try it from this distance, and then you finally get it right.
It's all mic placement. A family friend of mine growing up was Tom Dowd. And, you know, obviously he's a legend. And he was able to give me some tips when I was younger about mic placement. And it's really just about how close or how far you keep the mic from whatever you're doing and that right spot in that room.
Well,
you have to walk around the room and find the spot.
Well, aspiring producers and engineers that are listening, if this isn't proof that mic placement is important, then I don't know what is. This record is a perfect example of that. I'm going to play another one now. This is a title track from the record, Homesick, and then I got a couple other things I want to ask you, so I'll keep you a couple minutes over. Talk a little bit about Homesick and your creation of this one.
Well, okay, my initial inspiration was I had a title. I wanted to call the album Homesick. And I think that it's a title you can infer a lot by. You can basically assume that it means, you know, I miss Miami or I miss my family or I miss those days when I didn't have any, you know, personal responsibilities and things were easier and I was in elementary school, you know, and mm-hmm. maybe that's home. But I also think that it speaks to the way that the record was made. It was sort of a roaming studio. They had no home base.
Ah.
I got a recommendation from a friend of mine, Z Berg, the lead singer of The Like, and now J-Jams. Mm-hmm. She recommended that I do something at the Biltmore in downtown L.A. because visually it's a very beautiful place. We had to sneak around in there because there's constantly security guards everywhere. Mm-hmm. But because we didn't have a lot of camera equipment, we just had a phone, we could, you know, take a few pieces of a drum set, run around, go into a ballroom, cut something, then run out of there.
Nice.
And that's the way the song was made. It begins with a pretty ambitious Beach Boys-esque a cappella harmony part. And in the middle, there's this whole separate section. It had to be cut in parts, like Good Vibrations. I couldn't cut the song linear because there was just too much going on.
Right.
So if you looked at the multi-track of this, it's literally like splicing tape. Like, you can hear it almost after the second middle section going back into the main section of the song. There's a cut, and it's a really abrupt cut, and I wanted it to sound like a tape splice.
Wow.
On purpose. Because I thought, you know, that would be kind of a nod to the records that inspired me to make this album.
So
Homesick, it's the title track from Chris Price's record. It released this past June. You can find it on iTunes. We'll have the links for you where you can download this, because I know now that everybody's heard a few tracks, they're going to want to hear the rest of this record. Let's talk about your influences a little bit. I hear Beatles, but I also hear many of the bands that were directly influenced by the Beatles, the Matthew Sweets, XTC, Carl Wallinger. I mean, I'm sure I'm hitting home with there. Talk a little bit about how you got into music, your earliest. You talked a little bit about, you know, the McCartney album being a huge influence on you as a kid. What were some of the other bands? Was I kind of on with those influences as well?
You're pretty spot on. I mean, I was a record collector growing up. I collected vinyl. Mm-hmm. I listened to everything. I have a pretty deep love for Brazilian music, especially the Brazilian psychedelic music of the late 60s, the Tropicália movement, Caetano Veloso, Gilberto Gil, Os Mutantes.
Very cool.
It's a very creative sort of scene.
I don't think many people are really aware of how cool the pop music is coming out of Brazil as well, too. There's some good pop rock bands, too.
I absolutely agree with you. And, you know, it's just one of those places. You know, England and Brazil, as far as music, they just have their shit together.
Yep.
I don't know, can I say shit?
Of course you can.
so that's one scene I'm really into. I'm also a pretty unabashed English folky. I love Nick Drake and John Martin and Richard Thompson.
I'm guessing that you've also were a Jeff Lynne fan growing up, from the sound of
huge,
your music.
Yeah. Huge Jeff Lynne fan. I love the Raspberries. I love Big Star. You know, I love all the power pop stuff. Jellyfish, obviously.
Yeah.
Matthew Sweet. You know, Tal Bachman. Like, there's a whole lot of people that I'm influenced by in that realm. Emmett Rhodes is obviously a huge influence on me, because he was, you know, he did his first record in his parents' shed,
right
behind his house, on borrowed four-track equipment, and he, you know, he's a genius. And I got to meet him, and he's a friend of mine, and going into making this record, he gave me a lot of pointers personally on how to make a four-track record, and some pretty basic, you know, principles. If you're ever going to bounce two instruments together, always bounce a low-frequency and a high-frequency instrument. So, for example, a bass and a tambourine.
Right.
If you need more bass, you turn up the bass, and if you need more tambourine, you turn up the treble.
Yeah, it almost lets those tracks be separate by just using EQ, right?
Yeah, it's
very
kind of
cool.
A no-brainer. But I do want to say that if you're making a record on the Four Tracks app, you can cheat a little bit, because you're saving everything to a sound bank that you're uploading to your iTunes, and then you can put it on GarageBand or Pro Tools or anything you want to actually sort of compress and EQ and sort of edit the sound however you want.
Okay.
You can do that. So because of that, you can record the first three tracks, you can bounce them all together, make a submix of that, and then you can keep recording more tracks individually, and you still have the individual tracks that you did from the previous three when it comes to actually mixing the record together.
Did you do that method?
I did, on especially later in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, I tried to keep it as dogmatically four tracks as I could at the beginning.
Yeah, because I wondered how you got the vocals to sound so smooth and mixed so well. You can't really do that without really good compression, and I didn't know if the four tracks program had a built-in compressing processor in there.
It doesn't. A lot of the compression initially came from GarageBand.
Okay.
But my good friend Ducky Carlisle, who is just one of the most brilliant engineers, mixers, and producers in America right now, he came in towards the end of the project, and he polished everything up and made it sound brilliant.
But your final mixes came from that four tracks program off of those four tracks, correct?
That isn't entirely true. I mean, we tried to keep it as close to the initial sound as possible.
Okay.
But like I said, when it comes to bass and things like that, you have to export tracks into either GarageBand or Pro Tools or Logic or whatever program you're working on. And you got to get that EQ right. So there was an element at the end of sort of polishing sounds and getting them where they need to be. And obviously we mastered the record also.
Uh-huh.
In Phoenix, Roger Siebel at SAE Mastering mastered the record.
Ah, see, and that makes a huge difference too. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there were elements at the end, but everybody was mindful of maintaining the sound that came off of the phone.
Right.
If I were able to play you like individual tracks directly from my phone, it wouldn't sound like, it would sound pretty much exactly what you hear on the record. And I stressed, you know, there's going to be no tuning on the vocals. There was going to be no comping of vocals either. Like, it's pretty much just full, complete takes, unedited, just as they were on the phone.
What about a grid? What about a grid and a click track? Were you able to do that with four tracks?
That's an interesting story there. I could only use a click track for the first instrument that I would record for a song. And after that, the click track would sort of fall off grid. I guess it has to do with the processing power of the phone. But I would cut one track to a click. And then when I tried to cut a second track to the same click, it would just fall off from the first track. So basically, I would cut the first track to a click, let's say a piano, and then I'd have to play the entire rest of the song to that piano.
Well, that sounds to me like a blessing in disguise, because you didn't get married to the click the whole time. You just played to the instruments that were there.
Yes, that's exactly how it was done. There wasn't it wasn't fully gridded out, and I in some cases I didn't even use the metronome. Like, I didn't use it on For All We Know or pretty much any of the acoustic songs. I didn't need a click.
Right.
And a couple of the rock songs on the record, I didn't need to use a click.
Okay.
Just kind of play, because I'm playing to the first instrument anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of defeats the purpose of trying to get the...
Very, very cool. With the few minutes that we have left, I want to squeeze in a couple other things for you here, because I want to be fair, first of all, to the musicians that helped you out with this, because I know you didn't play every single thing on the record, so give the props to the other musicians that helped you out, and also tell me about how you're, you know, presenting this album live, and where you're playing, and where people can catch you.
Well, the song we just heard, Homesick, featured my two friends, Eric and Kate, who played all the violas on the record. All the strings were done by the two of them.
Beautiful
They're
stuff.
Brilliant.
Beautiful stuff.
The drums on that particular song were my friend Joe Siders, who just celebrated his birthday yesterday.
Happy birthday, Joe.
Happy birthday to Joe. And he, you know, he's a really good sport, because at that point we were doing drum by drum, and that song has a lot of complicated fills. He had to know where the toms were going to be when they came. My brother Mikey played bass on a couple tunes, and also 12 string on one song, English Gardens. Taylor Locke, who I co-wrote a couple of songs on the record with, plays and sings on it. He sings backup on Suicide, plays lead guitar on The Last Supper and English Gardens. Ned Brower from Rooney is the drummer on The Last Supper and on You Won't See Me Again. Lucy Walsh, she sings backgrounds also on Suicide. And I think that's pretty much it. That's pretty much everyone that helped me out on the record.
Chris Price, it's been a pleasure to meet you, man. And your record's really great. And it's an honor to have you on my show.
Thank you, though. It's an honor to appear.
You're a very, very cool guy. We look forward to seeing what comes up next. Will the next record be recorded on an iPad?
I'm thinking I'm going to do some kind of hybrid involving the phone, the iPad, and actual studio wizardry.
Wow, very cool. Hang on a second. We'll say our final goodbyes in a second, but let me wrap up the show. That's Chris Price from L.A. talking to us on the very phone. He recorded his entire album, Homesick. We have the appropriate links there on the show page for you to keep up with him and get a copy of that record as well. Thanks again, Chris.
Thank you.
Hang on for just a second. All right, catch more coming up. We have Alex Wise to look forward to in our next show coming up next Wednesday, I suppose, or this Wednesday. And also new shows. Continue to listen, like, and share. We really appreciate it. Continue to do so and check back regularly at BillMurphyShow.com.
Subscribe to the Bill Murphy Show podcast for free at iTunes. You can post comments about today's show, listen to archived episodes, and like the show on Facebook by visiting BillMurphyShow.com. A presentation of Bill Murphy Productions.